First responders carry a tremendous amount of stress within their jobs. Often the shifts are long and sometimes they don't end until a job is done. They encounter traumatic events frequently and may not have the time to process an event before having to manage another possible crisis. Even if the event is not distressing to the first responder, they are managing and assessing individuals who have found the event disturbing. They likely encounter reminders, triggers of prior events on calls, which can pose a challenge. Sometimes, those triggers may be related to their own personal experiences, dually impacting them by bringing early trauma exposures to surface. The interweave between personal trauma, on-the-job trauma, and having empathy for others' traumas can be overwhelming and may contribute to an impaired ability to maintain the emotional, physical, and mental demands of the job. This may result in compassion fatigue out of need for self-preservation, causing a myriad of personal and professional consequences for the individual. To counter the ongoing stress, trauma, and demands of the work, first responders need to develop coping strategies that can be both adaptive, healthy, or maladaptive, unhealthy. Without the ability to process or manage these day-to-day experiences, even healthy coping strategies may become unhealthy. Some common strategies first responders use include avoidance. Avoidance can provide short-term relief and act as a distraction. Gaming, substance use, or social withdrawal may all be avoidance strategies that temporarily provide relief, but they may create more stress or problems with long-term use. This may be termed compartmentalization, which may be helpful in the moment, but is not often a good long-term coping strategy. Defensiveness, lashing out, sarcasm, lying, covering up feelings can all be forms of defensiveness or denial. Defensiveness can include using rationalization, reasoning, or intellectualizing a problem in place of dealing with emotions. Extreme activities, risk-taking, thrill-seeking. First responders may engage in extreme versions of sports or risk-taking activities such as cliff jumping, skydiving, rock climbing, or racing. Individuals who are used to high levels of anxiety and stress may seek higher risk activities to let off steam, maintain adrenaline highs, or counter numbness. Extreme sports can also be a positive life-affirming experience that highly trained individuals find challenging and rewarding. Numbing, desensitizing, not recognizing severity of emotions. First responders often learn to become desensitized to the situations they respond to daily. While this can help them maintain professionalism and address crisis situations, it can become harder to recognize feelings, including symptoms of depression or anxiety, that can have personal consequences. Dark humor, sometimes referred to as morbid humor, is the casual referencing of violence, cruelty, suffering, and/or death in sometimes graphic ways that are meant to be funny. While not everyone appreciates this type of humor, first responders are more likely to poke fun at these serious and often taboo themes. Dark humor can reflect cynicism or irony used because of desensitization. Closed peer relationships. First responders are likely to hang with other first responders or professionals from similar fields and first responder families because there is a sense of familiarity and comfort among others for whom there is a great level of trust. They are less likely to need to explain themselves or try to accommodate people who do not understand first responder culture. First responders have higher rates of PTSD, depression, substance abuse, and suicidality than non-responders. A recent study has suggested that 30% of first responders have experienced PTSD, SAM-HSA. Additional research suggests that of those first responders who have PTSD, 20% have a substance abuse disorder, CDC. First responders may also experience depression, suicidality, anxiety, or substance abuse without clinical diagnosis of PTSD. PTSD may have existed prior to becoming a first responder, but be triggered by work exposure. Thoughts and feelings of suicide may also be triggered by moral injury, which is the psychological, behavioral, social, and sometimes spiritual distress, damage done to one's conscience or moral compass when that person perpetrates, fails to prevent, or witnesses events that contradict deeply held moral beliefs and expectations. Guilt, shame, disgust, and anger are common reactions of moral injury. Clinicians must have a broader understanding of suicidal preventions. Just because a person says, "I wish I could end it," and has access to lethal means doesn't necessarily mean we need to immediately move to Baker Act. Take their weapons and car keys. With the proper training, we can guide these thoughts to a better understanding, therefore eliminating suicidal thoughts. Clinicians must use caution and their own best judgment in this situation, of course. However, learning more about the intricacies of suicidality and suicide ideation is critical when working with first responders. First responders may also experience adjustment disorders with anxiety, depression, or mixed features that are complicated by their work experience. For example, a newly retired first responder may struggle with their sense of self and/or purpose in addition to feeling symptoms related to decompressing from years of crisis response and chronic stress. Physical symptoms from chronic stress, such as GI issues, headaches, or high blood pressure may cause further distress. Physical injuries from work may result in similar symptomology. First responders are used to powering through and may not recognize any of these symptoms as impairment. As a result, it is critical to recognize the potential of comorbidity to appropriately work with and treat each individual. Most first responders will come to you with multi-layered situations, what problems they are presenting with, and what they want you to see, versus what is hidden from the clinician and maybe even from themselves. First responders may have prior counseling experiences that are rooted in interpersonal, social, and professional problems. They may have received therapy to address prior personal traumatic or adverse experiences. More often, however, first responders are introduced to counseling out of a necessity related to interpersonal conflicts that can include relationships issues, recognized substance abuse problems, anger management, and other work or legal problems. They may be required to receive counseling as a disciplinary action, work performance concern, or legal issue that occurred outside the workplace, interpersonal violence, or domestic violence. When counseling is mandatory, the first responder may feel compelled to meet the minimum requirements that maintain their job, stay in good standing with their family and/or superiors, and meet policy regulations without getting much personally from the counseling. There may be fears of confidentiality or other barriers that create conflict in the therapeutic relationship and successful treatment. Mental health stigma is an ongoing concern. Thankfully, the stigma is starting to lose its power, but still exists in first responder culture. Because first responders are used to being resilient and high-functioning in many ways, they may believe they can solve whatever problem is occurring or expect that it will simply improve over time. They may also rely on other first responders who already serve as a social support and sounding boards, believing that they are the most likely to understand. Past personal beliefs or those generated from the work culture may cause fear related to being perceived as having mental problems, incompetent, or undeserving of the respect of others. They may fear being hospitalized, institutionalized, being labeled as crazy, or feel ashamed or embarrassed that they can't handle what is happening. A loss of trust due to mental health circumstances, i.e., crew members having concerns about the person's mental wellness after a Baker Act, may lead to coworkers, other members, ostracizing the individual. Additional barriers may include not knowing where or how to connect with a mental health professional, believing a therapist will not know how to help, or having prior bad experiences with seeking help. For example, I sought help after spending a few years in a child sex crime unit. The counselor halted our visit on day one because she could not handle what I was talking about. First responders may believe that treatments will be touchy-feely or focused on medications. They may have concerns with the cost of confidentiality of therapy and may struggle to find time in their already demanding schedules.